Tomorrow. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 15. And tomorrow, it will become cloudy with a 50% chance of snow by the afternoon with a high of 33 expected. Tomorrow night, blustery, light freezing rain or snow in the evening, then a chance of light freezing rain or snow after midnight as well. Several inches of snow accumulation is expected. Ice accumulation less than a tenth of an inch is also possible, a low of 28. Let's look at some temperatures around the state at the moment. In DeKalb, it is sunny and 15 degrees with a wind chill of 0. Chicago, mostly sunny and 20 with a wind chill of 9. In Joliet, it is sunny and 20 degrees. In Bloomington, sunny and 20 with a wind chill of 9. In Decatur, it's sunny and 21 with a wind chill of 12. Peoria, sunny and 20 with a wind chill of 9. In Springfield right now, it is sunny and 20 degrees. It's at Willard Airport in Champaign right now. It's mostly sunny and 21 degrees with a wind chill of 10. And at Friends Plaza in Urbana, it is 21 degrees. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
Welcome to day one of our Clear the Air fundraising campaign. We are asking for your support in helping us reach $40,000 in just 4 days. If you like the idea of zero extended pledge breaks, but still believe in the importance of your local public radio station, consider making a donation today. Call 217-244-9455 or go to willpledge.org right now. Again, that's 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Yesterday, the Illinois legislature heard testimony on gun issues in Springfield. Illinois Public Radio's Tony Arnold was there, and he has this report on why legislators say they didn't really learn much from the hearing.
The line for the general public to get into the hearing on guns was already long an hour before it started. Anyone looking to get in had to get through 2 metal detectors and have their driver's license photocopied. John Laskowski got in late.
I'm 60 years old. This is my first trip here.
Laskowski's from McHenry County and says he was in Springfield anyway, so he thought he'd pop in to see lawmakers at work. What he saw, for the last hour of the discussion at least, was a hearing with a particular emphasis on concealing weapons. Laskowski says he thinks there's some legitimacy to the argument that concealed carry could reduce crime.
People who suspect that there may be weapons available, in my mind, probably are less likely to go ahead and try to take advantage of someone that they presume to be vulnerable.
Laskowski says it's complicated, given the issues facing residents in urban, suburban, and rural areas of Illinois. Part of the gun debate includes banning certain types of guns, so-called assault weapons. Illinois is the only state in the country to not allow concealed carry, but that's likely to change soon. A federal court in Chicago recently mandated lawmakers in Springfield put something on the books by spring. That means the clock is ticking, which is where yesterday's guns hearing comes in. Thousands of people submitted requests to talk. That list was whittled down to 4 panels, mostly made up of lobbyists or representatives of groups invested in the discussion. People lawmakers have heard from before.
We have a concern that introducing firearms into the school environment would ultimately make schools less safe.
Nicole Wills is with the Illinois State Board of Education. She was part of the last panel, which spoke on the relationship between guns and businesses and schools. That panel was cut short because Republicans had the room signed out for 3 o'clock. When one GOP representative turned around to say the hearing was being too rushed, the chairwoman, Elaine Nekritz, could be heard talking a little off mic.
To your caucus.
After the meeting adjourned, many involved in the hearings, including Representative Dennis Reboletti, a Republican from DuPage County, didn't seem too concerned the school's panel was cut short.
You know what? We had been going for 3 hours, and I think people are very sensitive to the concerns of school safety, and they'll definitely be included in any type of decision. There's no doubt about that.
In fairness, some school groups said they would remain neutral on certain proposals, but also, most of what was said at the hearing, lawmakers had heard it all before.
Was that helpful to you at all to understand this issue in any way? Did you learn anything new here?
I don't think I gleaned anything else new, at least for myself.
Some of the school groups did make brief speeches saying they want a seat at the table during negotiations, negotiations that are not a part of these hearings, but are taking place out of the public eye.
I think it's fair to say there's a lot of behind-the-scenes conversations with a lot of the interested parties.
Those are conversations people like John Laskowski won't get to see.
I don't know. There are no easy answers. Definitely no easy answers. Don't know which way this is going to go.
Well, Laskowski could go to another legislative hearing Friday in Chicago, where public officials who have already made their positions known on gun legislation are expected to testify. I'm Tony Arnold.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. From time to time, Illinois Public Media staff members host community conversations with people in our listening area to find out more about what they're interested in right now. Yesterday, reporters Jim Meadows and Sean Powers met with members of the CU Fit Families, a group of people from different agencies in the area interested in health and wellness. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Chris.
And hello, Sean.
Hi.
So, Jim, who was at this meeting yesterday?
Well, there were people from the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District, which has an interest in promoting bicycling in the area, the Public Health District, local park districts, the Children's Science Museum, local hospitals, a lot of groups which have been meeting together informally. As a matter of fact, WILL was active with this group when it first formed 5 years ago to talk about ways to encourage fitness and nutrition. Now they're looking at becoming a more formal organization, not just a network, and they're working with funding from the Public Health District to formalize as a nonprofit group, which would raise money and then spend it on programs in the area.
Absolutely. Well, it seems like such a broad tent in terms of the issues of sort of health and well-being. Sean, what were some of the issues that were really coming up at this?
Well, you know, in the few years that we've been working with CU Fit Families, we heard some of the same points, having a more vibrant community, a safe community, more education, more inclusive. But we did hear some specifics that, you know, are also important. You know, one of the messages that was conveyed to us is we often think about a healthy community as being one that's active and knowledgeable about nutritious food. Obviously, a family's employment situation can play a big part in that. That's at least what some members of CU Fit Families told us. And a family's employment situation can contribute to a growing economy. The other thing that was brought up at this meeting was that there just isn't enough knowledge about healthy food, living an active, healthy lifestyle. One member joked, you know, that you know, she's heard kids say, oh, well, you know, hamburgers, they must come from ham. You know, it's obviously not true. So they really said that there needs to be more of an effort to educate the public about where food comes from, how it can be, you know, reused and made in a way that's healthy. We spoke to a person there who coordinates a community garden in Champaign, and she talked a lot about that and her work with kids.
One thing I heard which relates to that was you know, a desire to see, say, programs which help young people who haven't been picking up, you know, the knowledge just about food preparation from parents and grandparents. And because they essentially don't know how to cook, they don't have the opportunity to make decisions about what sort of foods they decide to eat. They just go for what's the easiest and what's closest.
Why aren't they picking up this information?
That's a good question, and I think that's part of it.
We have those family recipes that, you know, they get passed down, but where do they go?
Right. Well, in terms of you're mentioning this group is hoping to become more formalized to make proposals. I mean, what kind of informal proposals were coming up yesterday about how to address some of these problems?
Well, okay, so we did hear, for example, from a member from one of the local Head Start program, and she does a lot of work with the Latino community. And she said, you know, there needs to be more of an effort to reach out to families who maybe don't speak English or don't speak it as well and who have trouble understanding certain things. Where do you go to be physically active? Where's the YMCA? Where's the park? You know, potentially, you know, what can I do to make a really nutritious meal? So there are a lot of these other stronger messages that aren't being conveyed because, you know, for lack of a better term, there are language barriers that exist.
Jim, I guess one issue that came up that I was reading about was the issue of local produce. What did people have to say about that at the meeting yesterday?
Well, of course, the people we talked to there were all for local produce, but they saw that as something that was positive in a variety of ways. First of all, when you're making decisions about buying food locally, you're thinking more about it. You're thinking beyond just the easiest processed product on the shelf, and you're able to make more informed decisions about what sort of food you eat. But they also saw this as an economic benefit because local produce is grown by local farmers, and the growth, they say, that they've seen already with the sales of local foods at specialty food stores but also general supermarkets is contributing to the local economy.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more about many of these topics coming up on WILL. Jim and Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Welcome.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House, providing housing and food service to University of Illinois students for 64 years. Hendrick House works to ensure a quiet environment for study and relaxation. More information is available at 365-8000 or at hendrickhouse.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 20th of February, 2013. It's the birthday of the playwright Russell Crowes, born in Findlay, Ohio, in 1893. He wrote the play State of the Union, which became a movie starring Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn. Also famous for writing the books for musicals. Somebody writes the music, the lyrics, and then all the rest, the dialogue, the words that are not sung, are called the book. Russell Crowes wrote the book for Anything Goes by Cole Porter and the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, The Sound of Music. It's the birthday of a writer named Richard Matheson, born in Allendale, New Jersey, 1926. Stephen King once said, "Without Richard Matheson, I wouldn't be around. He is as much my father as Bessie Smith was Elvis Presley's mother." Richard Matheson was a horror and science fiction writer. He wrote for The Twilight Zone and Star Trek and more than 20 novels, 100 short stories. His most famous books include I Am Legend, The Shrinking Man, later retitled The Incredible Shrinking Man. It was on this day, 1952, Dylan Thomas flew to New York for his first reading tour of the United States to become a huge celebrity, people packing auditoriums to see him and hear his Welsh accent. Stories about his drinking and his womanizing made him a legend. He called himself the drunkenest man in the world. And it was on this day in 2005 that the journalist and writer Hunter S. Thompson died. He shot and killed himself at his home in Woody Creek, Colorado, at the age of 67. The author of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and many other books. Hunter Thompson, who said, "I hate to advocate drugs, alcohol, violence, or insanity to anyone, but they've always worked for me." Here's a poem for today, a poem by George Bilgear, entitled Museum. My father once sold a Chevy to Stan Museum, the story goes, back in the 50s, when the most coveted object in the universe of third grade was a Stan the Man.